The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, recently, something was making its way around all of my social media. I mean, have you ever had this experience where you're on your different social media feeds and a whole range of people are sharing the same thing? And I don't mean like a funny cat video. I mean a really incredible piece of writing that has clearly hit a nerve with a lot of people. Well, that's what happened when people read this piece on vulnerability as a disabled person, which appeared on autostraddle.com and is by the author Carrie Wade. And I was so struck by this piece, which is so bracing and so honest, that I just had to get Carrie on the show to talk about it. So let me tell you about her. Carrie Wade is a writer and a storyteller specializing in disability and identity. Her work has appeared on Autostraddle, Upworthy, and the Risk podcast, among other places. She lives in Los Angeles, where she does a lot of crossword puzzles and longs for a squish-faced dog. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Carrie.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So let's get this out of the way right away, which is that I used to have a squish-faced dog.
Oh, my God. Which kind?
She was a Boston Terrier.
So cute.
Her name was Jordan. She passed away a few years ago, but she was my number one companion of all times.
Oh, absolutely.
So I totally get that. I totally get that.
I just love them.
So, as I said in my open, really tons and tons of people shared this, at least on my feeds, right? Like, And it was one of those things where it's like, what is the universe trying to tell you, Tristan? Maybe to go read this piece. And then I read it and I just, I had so many feelings about it, both intellectual and emotional, actually. So I want to give people a little taste of the piece. And so you're going to read a little excerpt from the beginning?
Yes.
Great.
Last summer, I had sex for the first time in a long time. I couldn't even figure out if I liked it at first. That's how rusty I was. Having someone's hands on me again came as a shock. I didn't remember what a lot of the sensations felt like and wasn't a fan of all of them in the end. But I'll tell you what did stick in my mind. When she looked me in the eye and said, "You have a vulnerability thing, don't you?" When you live in an uncertain body, you learn early on to mitigate risk. I've taken at least 2 big falls a year since childhood and never broken a bone. That's how good I am at protecting myself. And as someone who's the right kind of disabled, enough that you can see it, because able-bodied people always want our proof, but not enough to scare anyone, I'm rewarded for that invulnerability. It's a currency that allows me to succeed in a complicated to hostile world. And make no mistake, when you're disabled, that is where we live. I don't have the kind of body or life people cry about, really. I have the kind that makes them feel good. The go get them, kid kind. The you sure don't let anything stop you kind. So from my earliest days of physical therapy, I heard over and over again about independence, about how to ask for as little help as possible. Because I have a body that can make it, you know? And somewhere along the way, I started to understand vulnerability as directly opposed to that independence.
Okay, so that was just the opening three paragraphs. And of course, I'm going to encourage people to go read the entire piece at autostraddle.com. And we're going to tweet out the direct link to that. This is such an intense piece on so many levels. And I know that you cover disability for Autostraddle, but are you often talking this personally?
You know, yes and no. I think from the moment I started writing for Autostraddle, which was actually a couple of years ago, I did kind of a one-off piece for them before I came on as a contributor and then as a staff writer. The piece that I started with was actually a super personal piece as well. It was about disability and kink and some past kinky experiences I had had and how those kind of helped unlock a new understanding of my body as a powerful thing, which is not really an idea that disabled people are supposed to have about our bodies and women of any ability level are supposed to have about our bodies, right? So I think from the very beginning with Autostraddle, I kind of jumped into the deep end because I had been a longtime reader and I knew what their community was like, and I knew that I could trust them to be a good place to kind of start this conversation. So I have been trying to be frank with their readership and the editorial staff there from the beginning, and they've always been really supportive of me. However, this is definitely in the latest round of pieces that I've done, which started early this year, early in the calendar year. This is definitely the most personal that I've gotten. And a lot of the pieces are personal essays, but this one was definitely the kind of scrape the depths of my soul in a new way. And it was good. I mean, I felt safe doing it because of all of the pieces that I've put out so far into this environment and on this platform and how well received they were. I knew that I could do it in a safe way and I wouldn't be misrepresented or taken out of context or whatever. But yeah, it definitely, once I realized that this was the topic that I wanted to tackle, I knew that I had to go this deep if I was going to be honest about it. And people would be able to tell if I was holding back. So I really had to commit to getting to that place if I was going to write about this.
And it did feel soul scraping, absolutely. As a reader, I think the first sentence alone, last summer I had sex for the first time in a long time, is itself really a subversion of kind of all we want to believe about disabled people and sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on some level, I feel like there's still this constant notion that disabled people don't have desire, don't have pleasure, and don't have sex.
Right. Totally.
Which we know is wrong.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's interesting because it's not even that people don't think that disabled people have sex lives. They don't even think we have sex drives. And there are a lot of disabled folks who are asexual or somewhere on the asexuality spectrum, and I don't want to minimize those experiences. You know, I have had to reframe the way that I discuss these issues too, to be more inclusive, because asexuality is such a kind of dirty word in the disability community because we have been kind of systemically desexualized as a community for so long that I think people tend to back away from the idea that some disabled folks can be asexual as a legitimate orientation and not just as a matter of systemic oppression. So I try to refer to it as non-sexual rather than asexual. But yeah, there is kind of this assumption that disabled people, like you said, don't even have the desire for sex. And by and large, for the disabled folks that I have met, that is not true. There is at least some level of sexual or and or romantic desire. And yeah, it can be really complicated to try to explain to somebody that just because your body looks and behaves in a certain way, it doesn't mean that you don't ever want to have sex with people. And it's interesting that you brought up that first sentence, because it kind of, it implies that I have sex now and that I have also had sex in the past.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, this is a continuing thing that happened with more than one person in my life. It wasn't right. just some token able-bodied person right. that took it upon themselves to be like, I'm going to do you a solid, girl, and show you what this is really all about. You know, this is not a fluke. It's actually happened more than once. Right. And yeah, that can be a lot for some people to wrap their head around, for sure.
To simply take in. Right. Yeah. And we've had other people on the show who identify as disabled who've talked about sexuality. And I'll say that it's like some of the most letters I get about shows are those from first other disabled people who are really happy to see, you know, their lives represented and just, and even different than them, but this conversation coming to the fore. And then from other people who've said, you know, this really made me rethink my own assumptions about disabled people. And right. I feel like that was also one of the functions for the piece for me. Is that like the first thing that I thought after I read it was like, she's so brave to write this. And then I was like, oh my God, I did it. Oh my God, I just did it. I was just ableist right there in my head.
Yep.
Right? Because like you've been hearing shit like that all,
yep.
all the time. And maybe not about writing, maybe about your physical accomplishments or whatever. Right. But like, it just, I did it. I did exactly what you said people do.
Well, thank you for calling yourself out on that so that I don't have to. I mean, so brave is such an interesting thing, because you're right. We do all get it all our lives. And the weird thing about that, you know, when people say, oh, you're so brave, most of the time it's not complimenting you for something that actually required any sort of bravery. It's like, oh, you got out of bed this morning, and that is really brave of you. And people have said to me, you know, able-bodied people will come up to me after I like do something, you know, and they'll say, I don't know how you do it. If I were you, I'd never leave the house. Or if I were you, I would kill myself, you know, and they mean it as a compliment. But what they're really saying is, your type of body and your experience in the world is so terrible that I don't think I could ever endure it. And so when people mostly say, you're so brave, that's kind of what they're implying of like, oh, the shittiest thing in the world happened to you, and I really don't know how you managed to not hate everything about yourself. That is really brave of you. But then when you do things like this, and that's all really patronizing, right? But then when you do things that are actually brave, like I would argue that writing a piece this personal and putting it on the internet is actually a very brave thing to do. So thank you for that. It's kind of like a boy that cried wolf situation, where you're not really sure if you can take that compliment anymore, like even when it's warranted and even when it's true. I do kind of flinch at the word brave or the word inspirational or anything that's in that category. It can be hard to take it when it's warranted, because so often it's coming from a less than desirable place. So yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. But also, like, I agree, it was very brave to write this piece, so you don't have to feel that bad about it.
Okay, but it was a good check to myself. Okay, we've got to take our first commercial break and hear from my absolutely fantastic supportive sponsor, The Pleasure Chest. Go to pleasurechest.com for all of your sex toy and product needs. And go to their stores. If you live in Chicago, LA, or New York, they have free sex ed workshops. Free. Every single week. And you can find out about those also on the website. So let's take a break. And when we come back, more with Carrie Wade.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Hey, I know that you are all following me, hopefully, on Facebook and on Twitter, but did you know I'm also on Instagram? Well, I am. I'm on Instagram at Tristan Taramino, and you can see lots of fun and sometimes exclusive photos that I don't post anywhere else. So please follow me. I also want to let you know what I'm up to this month. September 18th to the 23rd, I will be the guest in residence at Unit 1 Allen Hall at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. This is an incredible program that I did 5 years ago where I go to the University of Illinois for a week. I live in the dorm with the students and I eat with them and I teach nightly. I do presentations that are open to the public and everyone in the Urbana-Champaign community. And then during the day, I have these drop-in hours and less formal events. And it's really immersive and incredible. So I can't wait. And then from there, I go straight to New York City, where September 24th and 25th, I'll be at SHE, the Sexual Health Expo, where I'll be teaching a class and also facilitating a great panel of sexperts. And you can find out more by going to sexualhealthexpo.com. And then the next day, September 26th, I'm going to teach my fantasy role play class at the Pleasure Chest on the Upper East Side in New York. That's one of my favorite classes to teach, and it's free, so get there early for a seat. And if you want to know what I'm up to in general, you can check out the schedule on puckerup.com, click on tour. So I'm talking today with Carrie Wade about her incredible piece for autostraddle.com called On Vulnerability as a Disabled Person. And we got into it good before the break, Carrie. I wanted to talk about something that you laid out in a really, I think, really clear, accessible way in the piece, which is this good disabled, bad disabled trope.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me more about it and explain what you mean.
Well, I think that disability is something that, by and large, people don't really know how to discuss without freaking out, at least on the inside, if not on the outside as well. And one of the ways that people, and by that I mean able-bodied neurotypical people mostly, deal with their uncertainty and discomfort around disabled bodies and people is by compartmentalizing us into disabled people that they like and are okay with, and the ones that they aren't. And so a lot of where that division comes from is how much you can approximate an able-bodied appearance and life experience. And so the types of disabled people that are comfortable and can be kind of assimilated and integrated into at least American society in roughly comfortable ways are people like me who are white, who are ambulatory, who are verbal, who are, you know, neurotypical. I mean, it's funny, I'm not actually neurotypical because I have a cerebral palsy, which is, you know, it's cerebral. It involves your brain. But I can communicate verbally and on the level that most able-bodied people expect from people my age. And, you know, I have a college education. I came from a middle to upper middle class family. I've always had health insurance. You know, it's privilege, right? So if you stack enough privileges on top of a disabled body, you can make yourself palatable to the able-bodied population. And that's the kind of disabled person that able-bodied people love, because we're the kind that get, as somebody once actually described me to my mother, so close to normal. That's actually how someone described me once. I know. And I was a kid. This was in elementary school. And wow. They said, you know, my son, I think she was in a support group for parents of disabled kids. And this other parent was like, my son, you know, he'll never know what he's missing. You know, he'll never understand. And I feel so bad for your daughter because she's so close to normal. As if I'm going to always see this gap between me and the life I wish I had, which is fucked up on a million different levels. So they will pity you for that. They'll pity you for that gap because every able-bodied neurotypical person assumes that you want to be just like them, right? Like that's what able-bodied neurotypical privilege looks like, is the assumption that everybody should want that life and want to look and act and be like an able-bodied person.
Right. Like not only is that the norm, but it's also held up as sort of aspirational, that's also what we're all aspiring to be.
Right. Right. And that you should want that. And it's not even conceived of that you could not want that. You know what I mean? Like the other night I was in a Lyft. I had a Lyft driver who was talking to me about our jobs. And I mentioned that I'm a writer and he asked what I write about. And I said, oh, mostly disability issues. And so we got to talking about disability stuff a little bit. And he said, you know, but technology is, you know, moving forward so fast, like pretty soon they should be able to fix that, right? And I was like, but not everybody wants to be fixed, right? Like that's not it's not a thing. And I was like, would you fix a gay person? And he was like, no, that's not what I meant. And I was like, but it is what you meant. Right. Like, and the source of that language and that mindset is this idea that disability is inherently bad and inherently a lesser thing and an unfortunate tragedy that happened to you, right? As opposed to an identity and something that you can integrate deeply into yourself, which is what I try to do every day and what a lot of people who are, you know, whether or not they define themselves as disability activists, folks who are publicly disabled, and make that part of their work in the world. And even a lot of disabled folks who aren't, you know, building a public profile for themselves, but they still have that feeling. It's what a lot of disabled folks try to do, is sort of claim it as an identity. Just like I'm queer, right? And I will openly say that. I put my disability on the same level as my queerness, as like an identity node. So that is, you know, a difficult concept for a lot of people to wrap their minds around because of this binary understanding that good disabled people are like able-bodied people and bad disabled people are not like able-bodied people. So, you know, the expectation that you should always want to be an able-bodied person is at the root of that division. And bad disabled people are the ones who either don't want to be like able-bodied people or can't be because of various, you know, systemic barriers or just the way that their bodies are comprised and the things that they can and can't do in the world. You know, there's sort of, it's understood to be like a dirty word if you say that you can't do something. You know, like as a disabled person, you're expected to try extra hard all the time and just always find a way. And if you literally can't find a way, you turn into a bad disabled person. You turn into somebody who's lazy and just like not taking advantage of your resources and whatever. And, you know, bad disabled people, it looks like people who are nonverbal, people who are in wheelchairs that aren't like slick and impressive looking wheelchairs. You know, like we all have this image of the Paralympian in the manual chair or whatever. And we're all comfortable with that because it's like, oh, look what a strong person, you know, they're striving for something and they're achieving. But if you're a disabled person who, let's say, uses a power chair and has a breathing tube and communicates using a letter board or software or whatever, you know, people don't want to look at that. It's a little bit too real and too raw for a lot of able-bodied people to deal with. They don't really know how to wrap their minds around that without defaulting to pity. And I think that that is kind of why they are quick to write us off as bad disabled people if we look and behave in this way. Another key component of the bad disabled stereotype is that you don't have a job and you can't work. People act like not being able to work and not being able to be part of the able-bodied workforce, which is an inherently ableist system, it makes you a bad person. You know, so there are all sorts of stereotypes and assumptions that go into building this kind of binary understanding. And I think it's one of the most toxic things that disabled folks have to deal with in the world, especially because, and I think this is what I was getting at in my piece, it gets into our own minds. As much as it's out in the world, we are also taught to believe it and internalize it. And that's when it can get really dangerous.
And it seems to me it also, as you're saying all this, there's just so many intersections as well, right? It's like, it's like this whole notion that you can't work is this intersection with our capitalist society, right? And that we're all supposed to sort of raise ourselves up by the bootstraps. And then if you're also a person of color, then you're a disabled person of color who's doubly lazy, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
So all these intersections come into play, like in that framework that you've laid out, which essentially, again, just continues to center a certain kind of body and a certain kind of mind as what we all should be, and then everyone's like falling short of that.
Right, exactly.
Okay, we've got to take another break. God, there's so much more. There's so much more I need to ask you, and there's so much more we need to talk about, but we have two more segments, so I'm going to try not to panic here.
I believe in us.
Okay, good. Let's take a break, everyone. Listen to these commercials, which make it possible for me to have the show, and then when we come back, we are going to talk about so much more with Carrie Wade. So don't go anywhere.
Hey, everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio,
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I have been talking to Carrie Wade, who is a writer who covers disability for autostraddle.com and who recently wrote a piece that went viral, in my world at least, called On Vulnerability as a Disabled Person. So Carrie, another piece of this that I want to talk about, I just want to read a brief quote from you, which, you know, you read the beginning where this person said, oh, you have a vulnerability thing. And then later in the piece, you return to that and say, I need to call my, quote, vulnerability thing what it was, ableism. Internalized? Sure. And deliberately kept that way, like it would only cause harm if it got out. But all the same, it made itself at home in me without any right to be there. And it stayed for so long because it looked like other things. Perfectionism, intelligence, work ethic, high standards. So this is the piece of your writing that really resonated with me in a really deep and profound way, which is that vulnerability is actually one of the hardest things in the world for me to achieve. Mm-hmm. And I realized there that I actually just used the word achieve.
Careful.
Right. Instead of just have or show. Because I am an overachiever. And that part of your story really resonated with me. And also this idea that I have internalized really deeply, which I feel like now I had this light bulb moment, is a part of ableism, which is that neediness is bad. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you might talk about that.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's sort of at the heart of the problem for a lot of disabled folks just trying to make our way in the world, and really anybody, right? Because the fact is, we all need something and we all need somebody else at some point. We are all an interdependent people. And I think that what you were saying before the break about capitalism and kind of the intersections of ableism and capitalism, this is when it really comes out, right? This idea that if you need something, it's seen as something extra, quote unquote, like it's a special need, right? They like to use the term people with special needs. Mm-hmm. And that's just so fucked up, like that needing something puts you in like a special category away from the normal people who are just making it work and we don't understand why you can't do that, right? So there's, even in the most well-meaning language, there's kind of this demonization of need and this demonization of dependence in particular. And yeah, that was a really difficult thing for me to get over as well. I think as somebody that has been able to largely, definitely exist and largely succeed in the able-bodied world without too many problems, I sort of internalized that idea that because I could, I should, you know, because I could get by without asking for help and admitting my vulnerabilities and getting really deep into the muck of this whole situation. Nobody wants to hear that. So I should just sweep it under the rug forever and never discuss it. I think that it's such a toxic thing to do to yourself. You know, if you, because everybody has something that they are carrying as part of their life experience that needs to be shared in order for them to get through it. Like, especially if you're going through a difficult time or, you know, whatever. I think that silencing yourself for the comfort of others is a very dangerous habit. And so that was what I had done just with my entire life, you know, and my entire self of, let me just not you know, and I'll just build this perfect facade of like the straight A student, the like Phi Beta Kappa, the college grad who like has jobs and, you know, just everything looks so shiny and great. And then nobody will ask me anything about, you know, the more difficult aspects of this situation. I'll just make disability look easy because that's what everybody wants to assume it is anyway. And then I'll never have to confront the toxic feelings that I have about it. So it's a dangerous thing to do, but it's so easy. So I don't fault myself for slipping into that mindset, but I'm glad that I'm out of it now, or at least trying to get out of it in large part through writing things like this.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've had a very, very similar experience of just this perfectionism. It's like this weird Protestant work ethic that is somehow in my DNA, which I do come from Protestants. But same. Like, and I feel like it's just one of the hardest things in the world for me to ask for help.
Yeah.
I think that was also a part of this, which is that I related to this in so many ways and I don't identify as disabled, and it made me realize how little space there is between you and I.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know you, right?
Right.
I just mean it brought into focus this notion that like there are disabled people and I don't identify as disabled, so I'm like super different. And then as you talk about all these different elements and they resonate with me, I think, wait a second, is that even part of sort of ableist culture to think of myself as separate instead of to think all of us as kind of on this spectrum who all have different, you know, psychological and mental needs, who have different physical needs, who have different bodies, which can do different things, who have different minds, which work different ways. Mm-hmm. It was a little challenging for me to digest that. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I mean, ableism is so insidious. It really just gets in there. And it's interesting because it's just built so structurally into the ways that we think people should behave in the world, right? And the physical world is built for able-bodied people. And there are some adjustments that have been made, you know, thanks in large part to laws like the ADA and stuff like that, that make it possible for disabled folks to kind of keep up and, you know, whatever. Things are improving in that category most of the time. But the mental world, you know, and the expectations that we have of ourselves and others. I think for me, as somebody who is, you know, can walk and kind of approximate a lot of like able-bodied experience. I mean, I'm pretty visibly disabled once I'm standing up, but I can, you know, walk upstairs and take the train and, you know, all sorts of things. And for somebody like me, the mental side of expectation and kind of the standards that we set for ourselves and others, that's where ableism really took root in my life. And that is so hard to get rid of. Once you realize it's there, you're like, oh, this is in everything, like you were saying. And even in the kind of habit of saying, well, I am this and this other person is this, so we are not the same, but let me try to find something to relate to. You know, I think that it's tricky because I don't think that, you know, a lot of able-bodied people will be like, but we're all people, you know, I mean, it's like white
but
people
saying.
But that's
the same as saying we're colorblind. This like
exactly.
White people like literally need to eradicate that from our fucking vocabulary.
Exactly. I was about to say, it's like a white person being like, I don't see color. Right. It's like, oh, fuck you. No way. You know, that's not a way to deal with this at all. You're just avoiding the problem. And I think that able-bodied people like to do that too. They try to like look really inclusive by saying, well, we're all people and I understand you and whatever. And you really are just like me, as if that's what I want to hear. And that is the opposite of what I want to hear. I'm actually not an able-bodied person, nor do I want to be. And I don't appreciate it when people imply that that's what I should want, and they try to give me that invitation, you know? And I think I've said this in another piece for Auto Straddle, but I think that that invitation to distance is what ableism looks like when you filter it through privilege. If you have enough privilege as a disabled person, able-bodied people will give you kind of an honorary spot on the roster and be like, oh, you're just like us. It's fine. Like, you're not one of those people. Don't worry about them. Right. And those people being, right, bad disabled people that make able-bodied people uncomfortable in one way or another. And so it can be really tricky to navigate, like, yes, you can relate to me. And I think that that is key for disabled folks who are out there in the world creating things, to give space for common ground and understanding, while also acknowledging, like, our experiences are not the same, nor should they be, nor do I want them to be, you know, and walking that very fine line of, good, I'm glad you could relate to this, but that doesn't mean that we have equivalent life experiences. And that's also okay. You know, because I think that able-bodied and neurotypical people really love the assumption that we should all want to be exactly the same, which means exactly like them. And any kind of hole that you poke in that understanding, people get really uncomfortable around. So it's a very narrow kind of Venn diagram center of, like, relating. Yes, absolutely. As a writer, I want the reader to relate and see some of themselves and take away lessons and stuff that can help them in their life. But I don't want to be, I don't want that false equivalency between me and an able-bodied person to be the reason for that relation.
Yeah. Yeah, no, brilliantly said. Okay. We got to take our final commercial break. So, I know everyone's invested in this conversation, so I don't need to tell you to, like, stay put or don't go anywhere. You're here with us. I'm just going to assume that, okay? So we will just see you after the break.
Hey, everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I've been having a great conversation with Carrie Wade, who is a writer and a storyteller. And she does a lot of the disability coverage on autostraddle.com. One of the things that you wrote about in this piece that was so striking was that you said it took you 6 months to come out as queer and 21 years to acknowledge disability as part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my first question is, why was it so easy for you to come out as queer?
I don't know if easy is the word. It was more like, it was like a resignation, you know, like I like realized it was true and I realized it wasn't going away. And I was like, well, I should just deal with it because it's either just deal with it now or be really depressed forever. And I don't really want to do that. That seems shitty. So let me just put this all out on the table and see what happens. But it wasn't a matter of, I feel very empowered by this, you know, and it was sort of the opposite of like, well, can't beat them, join them. You know, like that was my initial approach to being gay. And I mean, I don't really fault myself as like a suburban 16-year-old. That's fine. Like the fact that I even came out in high school is kind of mind blowing because this was back in, you know, 2005, which doesn't sound that long ago.
No, it was. That's pretty cool.
yeah, exactly. So, you know, it, yeah, that was kind of a, well, okay, you know, thing. But I think that why it was so hard, why disability was much more difficult to wrestle with, was that I had internalized this ableist mindset, and especially around my sexuality, but kind of around everything in life of like, well, now that I know that I have cerebral palsy and I've always known that I have it and whatever, my job is to minimize it and make it as little of an issue as possible. And, you know, that's kind of what I did with being queer as well. Like kind of, well, this is true and I'm downplaying it so it doesn't make you straight people uncomfortable. But ableism, you know, people at that point in time were starting to recognize homophobia as kind of a toxic thing in our culture and kind of call it out and be like, don't be homophobic toward other people and like, don't be homophobic toward yourself. And we're going to start a gay straight alliance in high school and, you know, whatever, the needle was starting to move. But on ableism, like it still hasn't moved. Right. So I think it was just really easy to let ableism fester because nobody was talking about the fact that it exists and nobody was talking about what it looks and feels like, especially around sexuality, but around a million other things too. So I think that's what accounted for that gap.
And the other thing you said in the article, which really rang true, was why is vulnerability set up to be the secret ingredient in dating? Like if everyone would just open up to each other, we'd all fall in love. And so I'm a really big fan of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette franchise. don't judge me. But I find it just like a fascinating look at heteronormativity and dating and also the possibilities of non-monogamy if you don't watch the very end. And yeah, so and they really subscribe to that, right? So the conflict at the heart of nearly every relationship is whether you have opened up enough or you have not opened up.
Right.
And that like eventually sort of leads to breakups and people sort of pulling ahead in the race.
Right.
So where do you think this notion came that that's sort of the secret ingredient?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I did watch the majority of the most recent Bachelorette season. And the way that I feel about it is like, it's watching Animal Planet about heterosexuals. Like I'm really just like, these people are wild. Like I do not understand this at all. Anyway,
this ritual. Oh my God. Yeah. So we have to do an entire podcast FYI just on this. Okay.
Yes,
but go ahead.
But you know, I think that there's kind of this understanding that it's always going to be easy to open up to the people you love. And that is so strange because it's so at odds with this idea that we were talking about earlier that asking for help is bad, right? And so you kind of get caught in this double bind of like, don't ask for help, but open up to your partner. And again, you end up in this very narrow area of permissible behavior that you just have to strike the exact right balance of like, you know, being available to your partner, but not being too crazy, you know, and not
exactly. Cause that's the thing. It's like, oh, do you really want me to open up like to the darkest parts of myself?
Exactly.
Those are going to be ugly.
Right. And like, you know, you do that and then people are like, oh, not like that. Right. And it can be so easy to
just like shut it down if somebody gets too real, you know? And, but it's such a, it's a real mind fuck. Cause you're like, how am I supposed to negotiate these two things at the same time? And, you know, I mean, any woman living in American society is very familiar with double binds. So like we negotiate double, triple, quadruple binds all the time just to exist in the world and like make it home every day, you know? Mm-hmm. But it, yeah, it's really hard because you do have to be honest with the people that you're with. And I mean, as a disabled person, you know, in a relationship or dating, like, sorry, you do have to be really frank eventually about what your disability means. Like, I've had relationships kind of wither and die because of my refusal to be honest about that. And that's when everything was so cloaked in shame still that I just, like, didn't want to make it a thing. I was like, I'm not, you know, in this relationship, I'm not disabled. I'm not the disabled one. Because I've only ever dated able-bodied people, which is a completely separate thread in and of itself. And I think as a disabled person who can be sexually desirable to able-bodied people, that's a huge privilege, right? It's like, oh, well, you know, I'd still fuck her, right? Like, oh, that's God. Like, yikes, you know, yikes. And I mean, as a woman, right, one of the big metrics of how people are going to treat you in the world is whether they would sleep with you, right? Mm-hmm. And so as a disabled woman, it's like twice as much. So it can be really hard to open up to any partner, but especially able-bodied partners about like, okay, this is what my disability really means. Like, this is what you can see and this is the cursory understanding and you think you know and whatever, but here's the really deep, deep stuff, like you were saying. And when you can get down to that with somebody, it can feel like asking for permission, which is dangerous because you don't want to be apologizing for your own body. You know, you don't want to be like, sorry, I'm like this. Here's how we have to deal with it. But you really do have to be open. And it's just a very, it's really tricky. And, you know, it's not a matter of like finding the right person who's going to be on board with it, though. Like, that's like the narrative of putting it on the partner as like, oh, they're so understanding. Good for them. You know, it's not about that person. It's about your willingness as the disabled one or one of the disabled ones in the relationship to open up and be frank with your partner. It's not about whether they accept you or not, quote unquote, because like if they don't, fuck you. Like, you know, if somebody expresses any sort of difficulty in that area, you shouldn't be with that person. You know, it's not a matter of them like adjusting their attitude and being, you know, having such good moral fiber. It's a matter of you being able to be honest with yourself and with the other person or other people about what your needs are. And I think that is what the secret ingredient really is that ability to open up yourself regardless of how the other person is going to react.
A perfect way to end. Thank you so much for this conversation, Carrie.
Well, thank you. This has been so much fun.
Carrie Wade is a writer and storyteller specializing in disability and identity. She's a staff writer and writes a lot of stuff at autostraddle.com. And you can also follow her on Twitter at Wade Theory. Special thanks to all the people who make this show possible and a shout out to Jason, my engineer today. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, and we will have another edition of Sex Out Loud. See you then.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.